and he has gone into all the details and all the aspects of economic problem with a particular reference to the matters and problems referred to in the note of the Prime Minister. So, as a matter of fact, as one who has to second resolution, I need not repeat all what he has said, or I need not deal with the problems which he has dealt with in detail. What I propose to do is to make some general observations on the background of the resolution. And if I may make myself bold to say so, the political aspects of economic problems. Because we are a political party. We are not a body of economic experts and scientists who are merely thinking in terms of pure economics. We are a body of politicians thinking of economic problems in political terms. And I think this is what we are expected to do. Now, as a member of this body and as an active worker in the Indian political scene, I just try to look back and see what is it that we are thinking for the last nearly 6 or 7 years. I find there is a continuous, unending dialogue, discussion, debate on the economic problems. Every now and then we meet and we deliberate, come to certain conclusions, pass certain resolutions, and we think that we are but the solution. We go back, and when we try to think in terms of material, we have not found anything. Again the dialogue starts. Again the debate begins. But there is nothing really unnatural when I say that, are we deceiving ourselves or is this problem a very deluding problem? I don't think so. Because this problem is a continuing problem. There will have to be a continuous search for the solution to the economic problem. Therefore, I think as a body and as a party, we should not have some very static view about the economic problems, because we try to solve a problem, and by solving a problem, we give birth to new problems. That is the pattern of growth, I think, of society. This is how the life is going on. And therefore, if you see the problem, I don't think even the Prime Minister claimed this document to be a very scientific, perfect document. It's a recognition. If I read the document, I find it's a expression of a restless mind. Trying to tackle with certain problems which are deluding not only the administration, not only the party, but the people as a whole. This is the honest appraisal of the economic situation in the country. Therefore, we can't say that, well, this is my document, this is my theory, we have accepted it, and chodiya, yani chalne wala. This is not going to happen like that. So this is a continuous problem, and this is a continuous difficulty that we are facing today. What is the resolution? If you see the note, this note also recognizes another factor. And that factor is that it's not enough to talk in terms of merely principles and doctrines. It's much necessary to go into the details of problems. When you come to the implementation of problems, you have to go into the detailed aspects of the problems. It's administrative aspects of the problems. And if you see the first series of points that the Prime Minister's note makes mentions to, it's not merely trying to state a doctrine. It's an enumeration of certain problems or facets of problems that administration and the country faces in different phases. What happens to the administration of the corporate organizations, the unproductive expenditures, and conspicuous consumption. I mean, it's a recognition of certain detailed aspects of the administration and the policies of corporation organizations. I can go on repeating. My main argument is that this note recognizes certain detailed aspects of problems, and it calls upon us, it calls upon the state government, it calls upon the central administration to see the entire field of administration, which will ultimately be consistent with our basic approach of the economic problem, that whether we are trying to achieve the aim of social justice, whether we are trying to give a fair trial to the powers that are placed or vested in the corporate organizations to give more incentive to production, but at the same time follow the principle of fair distribution too. That really speaking the one aspect of the problem. What other aspects, I don't go into that, I don't want to repeat some of the same other arguments that have been said, that public sector and the consumer industries, this is I think one very important important step that we are contemplating here. We find at the present moment the most profit making industry is the consumer industry. I mean, the fact of life that we see in our economic life today is that naturally in basic industries there is a requirement of a very heavy industry. And there is a very long, period of gestation period, as we call it, gestation period. A question of coming to a mature stage when that product can start giving you profit, etc. But consumer industry is one sector where I think there is an unconscionable rate of profit that some industries do make. And we find, by the very nature of things, this has gone to the private sector. It has gone to the private sector also in a way which is a very large-scale private sector. Now the thing is, we have reached a stage that we have to find out that it is not enough that we have got the faster rate of industrialization. We have also to see that this faster rate of industrialization also gives the opportunity to the larger sections of people, the smaller people, for self-employment, for their own participation in the process of industrialization also. So that is the real very main problem before our country. So I know it's a very cautious statement. We know that you can't try to bring in the field of operation all the consumer industries. But as it is, it says that wherever possible, we'll have to leave the field of consumer industries either to the cooperatives or to the small-scale industries. This is a very important recognition of a policy that we have so far followed. But now it's a deliberate statement of policy which the state governments and the central governments are expected to follow. And if we do that, sir, I come from a state where we know that we have taken a very serious step and a very deliberate step of introducing the cooperatives in certain consumer industries, like textiles, like sugar industry. This is not been something very revolutionary, I can tell you. I don't claim this to be very revolutionary. It has been done in Maharashtra, it has been in Andhra, it has been in Mysore also. But the qualitative change that we see in the areas where these industries have been cooperatized, it's something, it's what one must go and see to believe it. Establishment of sugar factory by itself is not a very revolutionary step. Sugar industries are functioning in the country for the last 40-50 years. But if you go in the rural sector and when you see large number of agriculturists themselves, when they are planning an industry, when they are trying to run it, when they are participating in it, there is a liberation of new social force. And that is what I say. There are certainly some political aspects of the economic problems. Here is a political aspect of the economic problems. As we say in the case of good government, it is not enough to have a good government. People must feel like it is a good government. It is not enough that we have economic solutions, but the people in the country must feel that the solutions are being found out. And so the major problem today in the country is that are we giving that feeling to the people that the problems are being solved? It's not a criticism, I know. problems are being solved. I don't find there is any difficulty in the policy of the economic policy as such. But ultimately, as politicians and as one who has to deal with the main, as political party and as politicians, as administrators, you don't deal with their things. You deal with dynamic social situations. You have to deal with human people, human beings. And in this matter, sir, if we take a survey of the problems, therefore, I would like to restate what I was saying. There are two ways of dealing with the economic problems. One is the scientific way of things, taking a series of statistics, putting the scientific priorities of investments, working out the rate of growth, and telling your technical functions that you have found a solution. There is another way of dealing with economic problem is then take survey of the problems around you and see whether we have solved a problem. Sir, as a home minister, can I tell you the way a home minister looks at economic problems? I think it is better that you know that. For example, I mean, when there is a threat of breaking of constitution, naturally, we have to take very serious note of it. If somebody responsibly thinks in terms of breaking the constitution, I think they must be made aware that it's a serious mistake that they are making about it. But that is not enough. Thinking in terms of these problems merely in a law and order way is not enough. If you go to the rural areas, you have to find out this discontent in the rural areas, what is the reason for that? We have been talking in terms of socialism. What is ultimately the basic aim of socialism? It's not merely nationalization of socialism. If I can understand socialism, socialism really speaking presupposes the structural change in the economic relationship of different classes. That is what really speaking socialism is. And if we go to the rural areas today, can we say that there is a structural change in economic relations today? I don't see any. I mean, I must be honest now. There are landless labor, there are Harijans, there are tribals, and these things are seething with discontent. Unless we find solution to this problem, how can we say that we have found economic solutions to the problem? I see a large number of young people, because in the last 20 years, I think no country can claim that such a progress was made in the field of education, for example. No other country can claim in the history of last 100 years that what progress we have made in the field of education in this country, no country. But you know, we have solved the problem of education, but we have given birth to hundreds of new problems out of this education also. There is nothing wrong about it. As I say, a process and pattern of solving problems is to give birth to new problems, not getting afraid of starting new problems. Now there are educated young men, there are army of young men in rural areas who are educated. Army of young men educated in the urban areas also. The young son of a farmer who gets educated is a matter of pride to the farmer parents, because for generations there was no education in their family, and they are proud that their son is a graduate, a double graduate. But when he thinks in terms of employment, he finds ultimately that he is a loss to the parents, he is loss to the farming society, but at the same time he has not found his own feet in terms of economic problems. So now young people going without employment, without hope of employment, what are you going to tell them? Are we going to tell them, look here young men, you are educated people, you be most reasonable, rational. You know our country is making progress, our rate of growth is going rather slow. Wait for some time, starve for some time till we reach that stage of growth and have some little patience. It's a very rational argument, sir, but it's not a human argument. It's a rational argument, it's not a human argument. So these are the very definite challenges before us. And when I say that there is that restlessness, there is that continuous dialogue for solution of the economic problem, it is because of this. It's not enough that we say that we have found a principle, but whether we are making an impact on the social problems that are around us, that really speaking is the main reason for this continuous dialogue in this country. And I must say that this dialogue will continue. I have no doubt that this dialogue will have to be continued. If this party, which historically speaking is a reflection of the people's aspirations, Congress party, as I have always believed, is not just a political party in the modern sense of the term. I always believe that Congress party in this country is one of the political miracles. Because it never was formed in a way as other political parties are formed. Some people sit down, work out a constitution, work out a set of doctrines and say, well, this is what we stand for. This party has grown historically in the last 100 years as a response to the people's anger, people's reactions, people's despair, their aspirations, their hopes, their emotions. This is how this party has grown. So naturally, even in days to come also, this will have to go on continuously thinking about problems and the challenges that are around us. So the question of nationalization of banks has been discussed in this country for the last, in a pointed manner. And academically, possibly it might have been discussed for many, many decades. But at least as far as I remember, this problem came to be discussed in a very serious manner in the life of Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru. That was, I think, perhaps days before Bhubaneswar Congress in 1963. 64 was Bhubaneswar Congress January, but I am referring to the discussion before January, that is 1963. I am telling you about certain things in which personally I had the privilege of personal participation in those discussions. It was last month of 1963 when the working committee asked a group of working committee members to go into the problem. And sometimes history goes by certain accidents. There was a view that possibly the banking, nationalization of banking would have been accepted that time. But the then finance minister said, well, this is not the right time, and it's eluded out of the hands of the then members of the committee, and then it went on discussed. I think before the general elections of 1967, the question came for debate how we should look at the problem of nationalization of banking in terms of manifesto of the Congress elections. And then the term social control was accepted. Well, I mean, I don't want to go into these academic discussions of terms, etc. Genesis. But I just made a mention of Genesis, but that time, some of us who supported the idea of social control never thought that social control can, really speaking, be something separate than nationalization. Social control without nationalization has been no meaning, and nationalization without any social control is the greatest fraud, I would say. There is no meaning about it. Because merely taking over a bank without any social policy has no meaning. It merely degenerates into some sort of bureaucratization of the nationalization. So I think this controversy should not be given some sort of academic turn that is being given now. Personally, I feel now the direction is set. History has accepted this direction, and which is very, very difficult to retrace steps back now. When it happens, whether it happens today, whether it happens tomorrow, whether it happens next year or a year next, I don't want to tell you, because that's a matter of political wisdom of the party. That's a matter of political wisdom of the party. But my young friends, I would like to tell you, it is the political wisdom also that has a priority in this matter. I would like to tell you, this great body here, Working Congress Working Committee, this great body of Congress Working Committee, whatever is other defects maybe, but I can tell you, I'm not, I hope, Mr. President, I'm not disclosing any secret of it. But I have found, as a member of the Congress Working Committee for the last 12 years, starting as a junior backbench in the working committee till now, last 12-13 years, the one predominant factor that dominates this working committee is the sheer patriotism and ultimate wisdom to remain to low. Ultimate wisdom in remain together, but that is a great quality, I tell you. I know some people criticize that remain together for what? I know. But divide also for what? I would have to put a counter question like that. I know that mere unity has no meaning unless it is purposeful. I have no doubt about that. It has to be that. But I would like to tell you that mere radical economic program does not keep people together. At present, if you take the review on what's happening in the so-called left parties, they talk of very unified radical programs, but the way they are going to each other's source today shows that merely one radical program doesn't help us. There is also another aspect of it, and that aspect is a political vehicle, the political instrument to implement the political thought of. A political instrument, a political vehicle of organization and a political thought, they have to go hand in hand. It's like a body and a soul. So by itself, possibly, according to my own understanding, may have some existence, but possibly it has not that sort of perception. And a body without soul also has no meaning. Therefore, that wisdom is more important. That we have to have political thought, but at the same time, we must have this powerful organization called Congress, united, but set in a very purposeful direction to implement that political law. That is more important. And, friends, this resolution, if it is achieved, it has achieved this. It recognizes the necessities of continuously making review of the problems, continuously trying to find out, search our own heart, whether we are trying to meet the problems, solve the problems, but at the same time trying to understand each other and trying to remain together. This, really speaking, is the biggest achievement of this resolution, if there is any achievement. Well, friends, I do not want to take more of your time. I commend the acceptance of this resolution, and also I commend to the speakers who follow me throughout the debate, that they will keep this one fundamental thing in their mind, that we are comrades in arms. We are all inspired by a common objective of achieving socialism, democratic socialism in this country. Let us remain comrades. Let us remain friends. Let us not question each other's bona fides. Let us strive to help each other ultimately to help to achieve the